Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Canto 2, Chapter 4, Process of Creation. And I'm going to continue from where I left off. Yeah. And where I left off was, we'll be reading texts 14 and 15 from Chapter 4. Little background, just thinking how far back to go. It's important to appreciate the characteristics of the qualified hearer of the Bhagavatam, the qualified speaker of the Bhagavatam. No harm in repeating it, since that's such a dramatic theme in the whole of Srimad Bhagavatam. You certainly know that from the first canto. How many episodes there are of introducing a speaker and an audience, and understanding is made very clear about the qualification of the speaker, the qualification of the audience, the hearer. Because when that combination both is in place, then it happens. Transcendental knowledge, transcendental transformation takes place. Both have to be there. So, what better combination than Shukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Pariksit? So that, you know, it comes in the final chapters of the first canto. The glories of Maharaj Pariksit, so many things described about him, how qualified he was. Then comes Shukadeva Goswami. Oh, how qualified he was. Amazing in his qualification. And Maharaj Pariksit asks his two questions. First two chapters comes the answer. The answers, and they're repeated a few times in the course of the exchanges, because there's also Sutta who's speaking about that conversation, and he describes that conversation. And it gets to a point where the audience, the sages, say to Sutta, oh, they must have had further discussions, because look at the qualification of Shukadeva Goswami, this. Look at the qualification of Maharaj Pariksit, this. Surely they had further discussions. What were those discussions? What did they talk about? So then more about the qualification to Maharaj Pariksit and what he asked. He asked, you say that subject matter which one should hear about, chant, and remember always is Krishna Katha. Well, Krishna Katha, please. And specifically, I'd like to hear about how the Lord performs the act of creation. I understand from hearing from you that He's the cause of all causes, the absolute truth, the source of everything that exists. From him comes the whole of the spiritual and material worlds. How does he do it? Like Cosmos Technology 101. How does he do it? Shukadeva Goswami, you can describe this, because practically speaking, you're as good as Bhagavan. Now, he's not an impersonalist, but he's saying that because of your devotion, he gives three reasons. Because you're completely learned in the Vedas, and because you've realized everything. Not only you learned it, but you realized everything. And not only you realized everything, but you're living by it. You're perfect devotee. And those who are perfect in devotion, the Lord accepts as good as himself. So I accept you as good as Bhagavan. Please describe this. So now we're into chapter 4. Maharaj Parikshit, having asked this question of Shukadeva Goswami, who is fully equipped, we've heard from Sutta and from Maharaj Parikshit how he's got the goods. He's Professor Shukadeva. He's the dean of the whole department of Cosmos 101. He knows the whole thing. But he doesn't just immediately begin. He fixes his mind in absolute attention upon the personality of Godhead and prays to Krishna very sincerely, very intensely. Please enable me to speak in such a way that this question asked by Maharaj Parikshit will be presented properly. And the commentary explains that this is a devotee. Although already qualified, a devotee cannot think of acting independently. This is the qualification of Shukadeva Goswami. This is another. He's perfectly learned it. He's realized everything. He's pure in devotion. And he has no capacity even to think of independent action. That's the first thing he does. Looks inward toward the personality of Godhead, and then he speaks what he just experienced. He's speaking the glories of that Supreme Person. I'll read the previous texts. Shukadeva Goswami said, "Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who, for creation of the material world, accepts the three modes of nature," meaning that he expands himself as the qualitative forms of Brahma, Vishnu, and Mahesh. "He is the complete whole residing within the body of everyone," which is an interesting apparent contradiction. The complete whole that's within every fragmental part. Like, you know, the whole of Champaign-Urbana is in the apartment. Come on. We're college students, we know better than that. You can't put the whole Champaign-Urbana inside this apartment. It's a contradiction. But Shukadeva Goswami is described. So he has that potency that he's smaller than the smallest and bigger than the biggest at the same time. So he's outside of everything and within everything at the same time. And his ways are inconceivable. Inconceivable, but knowable. So with the mind we can't conceive, but with medium of devotion, then those apparent contradictions are adjusted. Again, offer my respectful obeisances unto the form of complete existence and transcendence, who is the liberator of the pious devotees from all distresses and the destroyer of the further advances of atheistic temperament of the non-devotees, which appears like partiality. He likes these people, he doesn't like those people. But Prabhupada explains it's not like that at all. He's equally kind to both. As they see him, he reciprocates. And even when he reciprocates against the, apparently against the demons, it's to check them from further implicating themselves in suffering. He's kind, or he's kind. But he exhibits that kindness differently according to the temperament of the person who is addressing him. For the transcendentalists, who are situated in the topmost spiritual perfection, he grants their special destinations. So he's the deliverer, the swift deliverer. So that's, he's offering prayers. And guess what? He continues offering prayers. Namo namaste stu rishabhaya sattvatam. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto he who is the associate of the members of the Yadu dynasty and who is always a problem for the non-devotees. There's a long purport. It's a beautiful purport. I'm going to read the whole purport. It's like, I don't know which part to highlight except the whole thing. So it's that kind of a purport. So the message again, he is the associate of the members of the Yadu dynasty and is always a problem for the non-devotees. So before Krishna appeared, he told the demigods, you take birth in the Yadu dynasty. So he's giving his association to his devotees and the demigods who appeared in the Yadu dynasty. And he's giving glory to King Yadu because he was a great devotee. So he's appearing as if, although he's transcendental, the associate of the members of the Yadu dynasty. And he brings a problem for the non-devotees. It's only because that's their regard for him. It's not his regard for them. But their regard for him is, uh-oh, here comes a problem. He is always the supreme enjoyer of both the material and spiritual worlds, yet he enjoys his own abode in the spiritual sky. Later, in the second canto, we're going to hear Purusha Sukta confirmed. And as in the Purusha Sukta prayers, so also in the Bhagavatam, which is a commentary on the Rig Veda mantras, the Purusha Sukta prayers, it uses the phrase that there's the three quarters, one quarter, that the spiritual world is three quarters, the material world is one quarter of all of creation. Not like it's a fine measurement. Give us just a general idea. This portion is so much smaller compared to the spiritual realm. He's the Lord of both. His abode is in the spiritual realm, but his expansions are the Vishnu avatars or the Purusha avatars, forms of Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, Shiradakshaya Vishnu. They're the spiritual life there, because there isn't life without soul. If you have a body without a soul, it's a dead body. The soul's presence means the body has apparent life. So this universe is also dead matter. Its expanding or its dynamic feature is the presence of Lord Vishnu. He's in both realms, but he considers this spiritual realm to be that which is enjoyable by him. And there's no one equal to him because his transcendental opulence is immeasurable. We can't say that about anybody else. Somebody that has immeasurable wealth, always measurable. Immeasurable intellect, it's always measurable. But Krishna's is immeasurable, and immeasurable everything. Immeasurable opulences, there's no one equal to him. Prabhupada would often use that word, asamordva. Sama means equal. Asama has no equal. And urdva means greater. And so there's no equal and there's no one greater. Asamordva. So here the language is Samya, equal status. Atishyena, Radhasa. There's no one equal in greatness in terms of opulence. Radhasa, opulence. Samya, Atishyena, Radhasa. Yes, no one is equal to him because of his transcendental opulence being immeasurable. That's the verse. And I'll just read swiftly the first paragraph. It's really nice. There are two sides of the transcendental manifestations of the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna. For the pure devotees, he is the constant companion. As in the case of his becoming one of the family members of the Yadu dynasty, or his becoming the friend of Arjuna, or his becoming the associate neighbor of the inhabitants of Vrindavan, as the son of Nanda Yashoda, the friend of Sudama, Sridhama, and Madhumangala, or the lovers of the damsels of Rajabhumi, etc. That part of his personal, that is part of his personal features. And by his impersonal features, so there's two sides of transcendental manifestations, the impersonal. By his impersonal feature, he expands the rays of the Brahmajyoti, which is limitless and all-pervasive. Part of this all-pervasive Brahmajyoti, which is compared to the sun's rays, is covered by the darkness of the Mahatattva, and this insignificant part is known as the material world. In this material world, there are innumerable universes like the one we can experience, and in each one of them, there are hundreds of thousands of planets like the one we are inhabiting. The mundaners are more or less captivated by the unlimited expansion of the rays of the Lord, but the devotees are concerned more with his personal form, from which everything is emanating. Janmad yasya yataha. As the sun rays are concentrated in the sun disk, the Brahma Jyoti is concentrated in Goloka Vrindavan. Nice metaphor. Rays everywhere, extended, but existing in a concentrated form in the sun planet. Brahma Jyoti extended everywhere and existing in concentrated form in the spiritual realm of Goloka Vrindavan. So it's not like two buckets over here is this bucket called the Brahma Jyoti and then that stops. We got another bucket over here. It's not like that. The immeasurable spiritual sky is full of spiritual planets named Vaikunthas far beyond the material sky. The mundaners, keeps using that phrase, have no sufficient information even of the mundane sky, so what can they think of the spiritual sky? Therefore, the mundaners are always far, far away from him. Even if, in the future, they are able to manufacture some machine whose speed may be accelerated to the velocity of wind or mind, the mundaners will still be unable to imagine reaching the planets of the spiritual sky. So, the Lord and his residential abode will always remain a myth or a mysterious problem, but for the devotees, the Lord will always be available as an associate. So Let's see how he started and how he ended. There are always two sides of the transcendental manifestations of the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna. And so now he's laid them all out in the spiritual different realm, these relationships. He's known in his relationships with different persons. Then from him, rays come, and his body represents the concentrated form of those rays, and then there's the rays. And within the rays, the Mahatattva, within the Mahatattva universes, within the universes, planets, there's one planet. Mundaners can't understand this one universe, what to speak of. So they take it as a myth or a problem. But the devotees know very well because of that quality of devotion. It's very nice. For the devotees, the Lord will always be available as an associate. Very beautifully done. Paragraph. In the spiritual sky, his opulence is immeasurable. The Lord resides in all the spiritual planets, the innumerable Vaikuntha planets, by expanding his plenary portions along with his liberated devotee associates. But the impersonalists who want to merge into the existence of the Lord are allowed to merge as one of the spiritual sparks of the Brahma Jyoti. Clear, very clear. Different destination according to a different disposition towards the Lord. The devotee goes to his abode. Those who want to merge with his existence become a spark in the Brahma Jyoti, at best. If no qualification for becoming associates of the Lord, either in the Vaikuntha planets or in the supreme planet, Goloka Vrindavan, described in the Bhagavad Gita as Madhama. And here in this verse says Svadhama. We're getting it because the topic is the process of creation. Over on this created side, it's way over here. It's, you know, not at all the fullness of the Lord, although he wants to understand it because it's in relation to the Lord. It's less important, but it's in relation to the Lord. Because it's in relation to the Lord, it's of interest. And there's another reason why it's of interest, because here we are. If we don't understand this in relation to the Lord, how are we going to understand the Lord? Is the logic Prabhupada is providing us. You look this way, you look front, back, sideways, up and down, and everywhere is material energy. And you don't see its relation to the Supreme Lord. You're stuck. Because it is in relation to the Supreme Lord, so how is it working? That's what he wants to know. That is to help one understand the Lord. And our relationship with him, not just the energy, the material energy. So now he wants to talk about the Madhama or Svadhama. So from Bhagavad Gita chapter 15, text number 6. Na tad bhashayate suryo na shashanko na pavaka yadgatva na divartante tad dhamma paramam mama. The Lord's Svadhamma does not require any sunlight or moonlight or electricity for illumination. That dham or place is supreme. And whoever goes there never comes back to this material world. Paragraph. The Vaikuntha planets and the Goloka Vrindavan planet are all self-illuminating in the rays scattered by those Svadhamma of the Lord constitute the existence of the Brahma Jyoti. Then he quotes, there's the same verse in Mundaka Upanishad, Katha Upanishad, and Sveta Shvatara Upanishad. Same verse in all three. Gives the Sanskrit, na yatra surya bhati na chandra tarakam. So again, na tatra suryo, na chandra taraka. There's no need of sun, moon, or stars for illumination, nor is there need of electricity, but to speak of ignited lamps, agni. On the other hand, it is because those planets are self-illuminating that all effulgence has become possible. And whatever there is that is dazzling is due to the reflection of that Swadhamma. End of paragraph. There's no need of light, or some other kind of artificial light. That's one side. The other way around is wherever there's artificial light, that's derived from this place. Last paragraph. One who is dazzled by the effulgence of the impersonal Brahmajyoti cannot know the personal transcendence. Therefore, in the Ishopanishad, text 15, it is prayed that the Lord shift his dazzling effulgence so that the devotee can see the real reality. What's that verse? Hiranmayena? Patrena satyasya pihitam mukham. You don't know? Tatvam pushan apavranu satya dharmaya drishtaye. O Lord, you are the maintainer of everything, both material and spiritual. This definition is paraphrased. It's not how you'll find it in Ishopanishad. And everything flourishes by your mercy. Your devotional service or bhakti yoga is the actual principle of religion, satya dharma, and I am engaging in that service. So kindly protect me by showing your real face. Please, therefore, remove the veil of your Brahmajyoti rays, Hiranmaya, golden effulgent rays. Remove the veil of your Brahmajyoti rays so that I can see your form of eternal bliss and knowledge. Satyasya pihitam mukham. I can see your face, your spiritual form. Behind the Brahmajyoti is the spiritual form. Or the Brahmajyoti has as its basis and support the personality of Godhead. Brahmanohi Pratishtaham in the 14th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So, let's go back to Shukadeva Goswami. He is being asked to describe the process of creation, and he's offering very, very suitable prayers to the Supreme Lord to empower him to speak about his creation while he's now letting us know that he is the Lord of both the material and the spiritual creation, while his abode is in the spiritual creation. In the spiritual realm and this material realm, which Maharaj Pariksit wants to hear about, is but a small, insignificant portion of the totality of the Lord's creation, resting in the Brahmajyoti rays of Him. Svadhamani Brahmani Ramsyate Namaha. Brahmani Ramsyate Namaha. I offer my obeisances unto you who derive your real happiness from that spiritual abode, while both the spiritual and the material abodes are coming from you, and you've appeared within that material realm as a member of the Adi dynasty, giving happiness to all of your devotees. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. It's like in Bhagavad Gita, we know from the first and second chapters there are different names by which Arjuna is addressing Krishna, Achyuta and Madhusudana and Rishikesha and so forth, and they all have some significance. It's not just an intellectual thing. When the Lord is addressed in a certain way, then some feature of him is invoked through that name. O Achyuta, you're infallible and I'm struggling down here. Please protect me. O Madhusudana, you're the killer of the Madhu demon. Please destroy the demons of my doubts. And so forth. So, because he's being asked to speak about the Lord as how the Lord works with his energies to make this cosmic manifestation come into being, he's addressing the Lord in appropriate ways so that he'll be able to properly speak on the subject he's being asked to speak about. He's up there. Shukadeva Goswami. Again, let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the all-auspicious Lord Sri Krishna, about whom glorification, remembrances, audience, prayers, hearing, and worship can at once cleanse the effects of all sins of the performer. So he's supremely pure. Pavitram Param, Arjuna indicates in Bhagavad Gita. Since he's the supreme pure, then chanting about him, remembering him, praying to him, directing our consciousness to him, because he's the supreme pure, by different methods of service, authorized methods of service, one becomes pure. When he comes into this realm, he comes to purify. He doesn't become contaminated. And one who thinks of him and his activities and teachings and messages, the effects is that the sins of such a person are eradicated. So Sukadeva Goswami is saying, Maharaj Pariksit, you will become completely purified just by hearing this very auspicious topic, and we will also, if we hear in the proper way. So, paraphrased, he who's doing the creating is fully transcendental. Although the act of creation appears to be material, but he is fully transcendental. Untouched by this realm and its contaminations, he's supremely pure and always stays supremely pure. So let me fix my mind upon him while I'm describing the affairs of material creation. So that's a nice lesson, you know, for your academic work. You're having to do with some very technical aspect of material creation, how to ensure that your consciousness doesn't become similarly contaminated. Shukadeva Goswami showing the way. Fixing explicitly the mind upon the all pure Supreme Personality Godhead. Because he's all pure, even when dealing with material topics, as Shukadeva Goswami is also going to do, because the material energy is material. But because it's in relation to the Lord, and what is seeing it in relation to the Lord is purifying. Short purport. The sublime form of religious performances to free oneself from all reactions of sins is suggested herein by the greatest authority, Sri Shukadeva Goswami. So, all theologies of the world have some method of freeing oneself from sin. Now, big time in Christian religion, that's like their theme, how to become free from sin. And here in the Bhagavatam, that question comes up several times and it's being addressed by bringing your consciousness in touch with the Supreme Pure. That's the method. Then you become free from sin. free from impure. And not just, the Bhagavatam teaches, not just so you become free from the reactions of material contact, but you no longer desire material contact. You no longer incur further sin. Yes? Like, you know, someone that has a disease. So, doctors may be able to cure the patient from the disease, but if they maintain the same lifestyle, they'll contract the disease again. You have to change the lifestyle or change the heart. That phrase, change of heart, was discussed in the third chapter very strongly. And the process of hearing the purifying topics of the personality Godhead is meant to bring about that change of heart. So that is, no more material contact. Even in the material world. How's that? We're in the material world, there's material contact. And the answer is not, if your consciousness is absorbed in the Supreme Pure, then your consciousness can remain in a pure and elevated position, even moving about this material world. The place where we contaminated, but one stays apapa vidham, free from sin, or Prabhupada translates that as prophylactic. So you're sterilized from bacterial infection. So you're kept protected from the contaminations of material existence, the modes of nature, for example, the influence of the pushings and pullings of the modes of nature, if you're fixed in transcendence, or if your thoughts are absorbed, even in dealing with academic things or worldly things or family things or money things or whatever things. If consciousness is absorbed in supreme, and that becomes possible by the hearing and chanting process, especially. So, kirtanam, or glorifying the Lord, can be performed in many ways, such as remembering, visiting temples to see the deity, offering prayers in front of the Lord, and hearing recitations of glorification of the Lord as they are mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam or in Bhagavad Gita. Kirtanam can be performed both by singing the glories of the Lord in accompaniment with melodious music, and by recitation of scriptures like Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita. Paragraph. The devotees need not be disappointed in the physical absence of the Lord, though they may think of not being associated with Him. The devotional process of chanting, hearing, remembering, etc. Some of them, all of them, or even one of them, can give the desired result of associating with the Lord. Because this is of the absolute nature of the Supreme, His name and He are not different. His form and He are not different. His qualities and He are not different. The glorification of Him is, and Himself are not different. That is the process of bhakti, because it's the object is the Supreme, has the same absolute nature as Krishna. Hearing about Krishna and Krishna are the same. Krishna's name and Krishna are the same. Chanting Krishna's name and associating with Krishna. It's associating with Krishna. There's no difference. It's associating with a particular aspect of Him. His name. But His name of Krishna is no different than Krishna. The process that connects us with the Supreme is equally pure, as the Supreme is pure. And they're both equally purifying. Even the very sound of the holy name of Lord Krishna or Rama can at once surcharge the atmosphere spiritually. We must know definitely that the Lord has present wherever such pure transcendental service is performed, and thus the performer of offenseless kirtan has positive association with the Lord. And so similarly for the other of the nine processes, he specifically mentions remembrance and prayers can give us the desired result if they are properly done under expert guidance. Then he goes the other direction. Don't concoct. One should not concoct forms of devotional service. The tendency to concoct is as old as existence, because that's what existence is. It's a concoction. Something apart from Krishna, and call that happiness. Call it spiritual, call it religious, call it something, give it a nice name, but concoct. And that's not the process of connecting with Krishna. The process of connecting with Krishna is in an authorized way, under proper direction. And when it's done in that way, one's directly associating. Now, listen carefully to the next thing, where Prabhupada is speaking about impersonal relating impersonally with the Lord. One may worship the form of the Lord in a temple, or one may impersonally offer the Lord devotional prayers in a mosque or church. That is, by that, it's not, you know, not understanding the form, quality, names, pastimes of the Lord, but he exists. Sat. The Sat feature of the Lord, and offering prayers in an impersonal way to it, or God, or maybe, you know, with the gender, him. But who's him, or who is he? Who is God? To not, where the sense of personal identity is weak at best or very unclear. There's a lot of that, that under the name of religion, there's such activity. That's one of the features of the Lord. That's okay. And so, according to our Bhagavatam teaching, such prayer can free one from reactions of all sin. That it cannot bring one to the personal association of Krishna, only through devotion. We're almost completed here. One is sure to get free from the reactions of sins, provided one is very careful about not committing sins willfully in expectation of getting free from the reactions of sins by worship in the temple or offering prayers in the church. This mentality of committing sins willfully on the strength of devotional service is called namno bhavadyasya hi papa buddhihi, sinning on the strength of chanting. And it is the greatest offense in the discharge of devotional service. Were two sentences to completion. Hearing, therefore, is essential in order to keep oneself strictly on guard against such pitfalls of sins. So, Srimad Bhagavatam, the whole Bhagavat process, is very much emphasizing the role of hearing and chanting, Shravanam Kirtanam. And it's not the main glory of Shravanam Kirtanam that sins are eradicated, although certainly that takes place. Like when you have light, darkness is not there. That's nice. What else? You know, you can see objects. So when the hearing and chanting of the personality of God is there, one can actually personally associate with Krishna. And as one becomes further purified, that personal association with Krishna intensifies. and it grows in a more and more personal dimension. So much so that it qualifies to one to enter into the eternal abode of the Lord. Just by that, at what we're doing now, at least at this stage, is practice. But when it practice becomes part of our nature, and it becomes spontaneous, and it becomes the transcendental experience, that consciousness that's cultivated carries one to the spiritual realm, to the abode of Krishna. And even while in this life, very advanced devotees, they're able to personally, tangibly experience Krishna's presence. Even literally see him, or have him speak with them, or whatever the Lord so desires, or for sake of intimacy. Even in this covered, embodied condition. At least from our own experience, we can experience purification, knowing that further purification leads to these higher stages, like Shukadeva Goswami. Or at least by hearing from him, we become like him. And that's the Vedic way. In Chicago, we're reading from the third canto of the Bhagavatam, where Maitreya is being approached by Vidura. And after the whole exchange between Maitreya and Vidura, Maitreya, who has become a perfectly realized soul by hearing directly from Krishna as he was speaking to Uddhava, Vidura comes to the same platform just by associating with Maitreya. He becomes a Mahabhagavata devotee. Before, he was a very elevated member of the royal family, very wise and astute and religious. He becomes a Mahabhagavata through the association of a Mahabhagavata. And so, similarly, by hearing and discussing the topics given by our acharyas and very beautifully rendered by Srila Prabhupada in his purports, we're getting that association. To be continued tomorrow morning. You're tired too. Okay. Any discussion? You have something? No.
You were saying that if we hear in the proper way, we also will become good faith. So, is it like hearing with submission? Hearing in the proper way?
That's part of it, sure.
Could you kind of make part of that?
There are other qualifying characteristics that are described. Eagerness. With great attention. The submission which you mentioned is submission to both the person and the subject matter. And submission to the person and the subject matter both indicate submission to the subject, Krishna. Eagerness is what it sounds like. It, you know, I want to know. I want to have that experience of contacting Krishna in this manner. Someone came after the Sunday feast yesterday in Chicago, and their questions were very, very sincere. They have a very difficult situation in their living situation. You know, enough that a normal person would just be terribly disturbed by the circumstance. Their thoughts are far from the difficulties of the circumstance. Their thoughts are in this place of eagerness. They want to know how to get closer to Krishna, not how to so I can just drown, forget this problem that I have. It just has faded in significance in their life because of this eagerness. The whole of the material glare fades when there's proper eagerness, like the light of a glowworm during the daytime. It may be fascinating at nighttime. In daytime, significance is nowhere. So this eagerness to drink through the ear or to hear, and then after that to live with it, to resonate with it, to stay in connection with Krishna all the time, stay in connection with that message all the time by applying it. So many things. With quality hearing, to enhance the quality of one's hearing, to envelop one's life in the quality of goodness, or design one's life in such a way that the mode of goodness is my environment that helps one absorb the mind and hearing. Another theme is respectful. The statements made each time a speaker is introduced in the Bhagavatam, the hearer first of all addresses their appreciation, or their respect for the qualifications of the speaker, like opening their heart by doing that. And assists in the hearing process. One can say that's part of submission, but it's explicitly articulating. There may be circumstances where that's not so appropriate, but at least internally, that process should take place. Here we find Shukadeva Goswami is in the speaking process, same as Shukadeva, as Maharaj pictured in the hearing process. The subject matter is worth hearing. So there's some explicit acknowledgement of the beneficial nature of the subject matter, which you could say that's part of eagerness also. But very specific. This subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam is unique. What's unique about it? So bringing one's attention to bear on the uniqueness of it, the super excellence amongst all Vedic literature. So, glorification, mahima. Traditionally, in Vedic literature, the opening parts of texts of a religious text will have that in the very beginning, so that the reader or the audience will pay special attention. and hear with reverence and respect. Those are some things. Anything else?
So, Maharaj Parikshit was already a Mahabharata devotee. So then one would think that he knows all these subject matter. But he again asks these questions. So is it more to hear that a British subject matter?
Not more, but that certainly is part of it. But he understands, although he's a Mahabhagavata devotee, we say he achieved perfection by hearing from Shukadeva Goswami, right? So, his platform of devotion, we heard here from the first canto, how elevated is his devotion. Yet, we hear in the second canto, by hearing the words of Shukadeva Goswami, he freed himself very easily from all contact with the material energy. He very easily gave up. So, by doing worldly duties, that contact with matter is agitating. So because of his so many qualifications, he maintained his position of pure devotional service. But now he's entering the stage of detaching himself even from that, of that external contact, and consolidating his consciousness completely on the subject of Krishna through the assistance and the association of Shukadeva. And by so doing, you can say residual tendency due to material contact was being relieved, because the consciousness that he's in at the end of the 12th canto of the Bhagavatam, it's not the same as when he started. We can say like that with Vidura also. He's Yamaraj. But, you know, was there any shortcoming in him? But in the Bhagavatam class this morning, there was discussion about these steps that he, by the prompting of circumstance, recognizing His ability to help his brother Dhritarashtra was not going anywhere. He didn't have the capacity. When he came back, he had the capacity. Something happened in between. Besides, certainly something, circumstance happened with Dhritarashtra, but something happened with him. Detachment, purification by visiting the places of pilgrimage and hearing from the saintly persons there. Meeting with Uddhava, hearing from Uddhava. Meeting with Maitreya, hearing from Maitreya. Hearing exhaustively from Maitreya. He became a perfected soul. So, Maharaj Parikshit was in a very special class of devotee before meeting Shukadeva, but he got further. So yes, he knew. Your question started, didn't he know about these things? Yes. He wanted to hear Shukadeva Goswami explain, not just for, you know, I'll get a little more detail here and there, but the spiritual force of his realization would take him beyond knowing, you know, having information, knowing, but more deeply realizing. That's what he wanted to hear. Yes, further purification just from hearing, even that which we may already know, because it's in relation to Krishna. addition to that, I want to hear from you.
We see the similar kind of parallel even in Prahlad Maharaj's situation, where it is, if I remember correctly, it is said that in all the even traces of material attachment between him and the
Indian.
Yeah. It was very for me too.
Well, that's a theme in the Bhagavatam. Sometimes it says, and then devotional service began. Well, wait a minute, what was going on before that? Looked pretty good to me. So there are degrees of purification or degrees of perfection, the degrees of being cleansed. And one should never be complacent or think, okay,
fuck, I made it.
But always striving. And through elevated, we discussed this point in Bhagavatam class this morning, same point. We should always be striving for further progress. Through, and to get further progress, the messages or the association or a humble mood of service, the servant of the servant of the servant, and that we access the happiness of Krishna, bring about further purification. Yeah, the conclusion of this morning's verse or purport was, therefore, one should always be vigilantly engaged in activities of hearing and chanting to keep oneself protected and completely free from contamination of material existence. Stay in contact with the Supreme. And then it becomes further. Why not? It's not static, it's dynamic. Further and further. Something?
I was observing something, and I'm thinking that, kind of curious, because when I ask a question or anything, it's usually, personally related to me, or something like that. Yeah, these devotees are glorifying that, clearly glorifying Krishna. There's no meaning in that. So, do you think that we should do that?
Your question is it difficult to get to that stage? That's your question?
No, isn't that I should practice that? That's what I'm asking.
Does it come about by practice? That's your question? That's not your question. What's your question?
More like, am I being wrong by being misinterpreted?
Am I being wrong by asking questions in relation to my personal advancement? And I should just change the channel? That's your question?
Yeah, more like not being me conscious.
Well, you want to apply, yes? That's me. You know, you could say it differently. What about these guys? You know, could they advance a little bit more in Krishna consciousness if they did certain things? You want to advance in Krishna consciousness. So it's a question that's first person singular, is for personal purification. That's not a problem. Maharaj Pariksit should ask, you know, what should I do? What's my duty now that I'm about to die? What's that subject matter that I should hear and chant and remember? First person singular. But Shukadeva Goswami appreciated, oh, this is good for everybody. Very good. So it's more the consciousness than the language. Okay. Antaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.